Welcome to the Digital Government Podcast. Tune in to discover the future of governance and ways of getting there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to all our listeners. I'm your usual host, Federico Plantera, journalist, sociologist, and researcher. And today we're talking about one of the topics that are going to make one of the main sessions of the upcoming e-governance conference 2023. Today, indeed, we have Margus Klar here to discuss digital vulnerability. So welcome, Margus.
Hello.
A little introduction to Margus and also to the topic of digital vulnerability. First of all, Margus is will have a keynote at the Governance Conference 2023 and will also participate in the panel relative exactly to the topic of digital vulnerability. Why? Because Margus is a strategist and service designer and also a founding partner of Brand Manual. In the past, among his projects and the projects of the company, he also has dealt, for example, with topics that regard challenges faced by a special needs student in vocational education, and in any case, in general, his core expertise is exactly in service design. Why does this matter to us and to everyone, and to specifically the topic of digital vulnerability? Because one of the sessions that will take place at the e-governance conference of the end of May is exactly about how to design services also for the people that might fall, let's say, outside the scope of service design when it comes to public services. And we're talking about the digitally vulnerable. Now, many of you might be wondering already, like, what does it mean, digital vulnerability? Who are the digitally vulnerable? Well, instead, Margus, I could say that for us, instead, we're playing a little bit on home turf, let's say. It's like a little bit of a home game. First of all, because we're both going to take part in the panel discussion that will be at the conference. And second, also because the topic of the panel itself is also based around, this is like more of a personal point, let's say, is based around one of the main principles of representative democracy, you know, in the way that we have framed it and phrased it on in the introduction to the conference, which is nothing about us without us. So I would say that maybe we could start to introduce the topic and explain digital vulnerability from this sentence a little bit. No, so what does it mean? Nothing about us without us, and how is that related to the topic of service design in digital transformation?
That's a long and complex question to unpack, but let's start with nothing about us without us. In service design, or in any kind of good design, you have to consider who you're making it for. In the simplest terms, if you're going to design a chair for your mother, then you're going to prototype a chair. And once you have something that doesn't fall apart, you're going to ask your mother to sit on it and ask her if she likes it or not. And she's going to comment saying that it's too high, too hard, too low, too soft. And then you're going to go back to the workshop, be a little bit angry on yourself that you didn't get it right the first time, and you're going to make version two. And you're going to test it again with your mother till the point where you have version 3, 4, 5, and your mother says that this is perfect. And then you have actually designed something for someone who can use it the way they want to use it, because she might have asked for a cup holder for her wine glass, or somewhere to put a book or whatever else that she actually needs when she's sitting down, because she might not want to get up all the time. So that's the whole idea of that you're going to work with the person or persons that you're designing something for, in order to make sure that it actually works for them when they need it, when in the manner that they want to use it. And that's in service design is just expanding that to a target group, that you actually find out who you are making this solution for, and you involve them actively in the process of creating that solution.
This raises a question from my side, which is, but does this imply or mean that certain categories of people who in any case are meant to be public service users, or even if we're not talking about public services, let's say other services in general that can be accessed online, does this mean that so far these people have not been considered enough or have not been part of the process in a way that they should have?
Well, it's actually quite common that you don't consider an extreme majority or minority. The thing is that everything has a bell curve in terms of user groups. There is a sort of a mass of people that use a service that are able to use it in a give or take normal way, who when they face difficulties, they either ignore them or they learn how to fix it. And they happen to be there using a service for whatever, you know, purpose it is, and don't experience problems because they are similar to the people who created it. But when you add on vulnerabilities, add on age, add on handicaps of different kinds, mobility issues, vision issues, hearing impairments, age, if you're 5 years old, you're not as smart as a 25-year-old, although you might argue the opposite a few times. If you're 85, you're not acting like a 45-year-old, you're going to have different kinds of problems. And these extremes, as we like to call them, are on the side of the majority group of consumers, users for most services. And therefore, we don't consider them as important as the majority that is there by default, sort of. And the paradox of that is that people who have specific problems or issues or ideas about a product or service have definite opinions. Using the insight of these very specific and narrow user groups to fix the service in general makes the service also usable for everyone else more than just focusing on the regular, you know, average human being. And the example that we always use is if you consider just accessibility in a cityscape. If you build a city based on a human being with two legs, two arms, one head, an average height of around 180 centimeters and normally mobile, then you're going to have sidewalks, you're going to have stairs, you're going to have doors that you need to open with a handle, and you have all these issues which all make sense for the majority. But if you're in a wheelchair, or you're pushing a baby carriage, or you're skateboarding, all these things become issues and problems. But if you focus on the most vulnerable, for example, a wheelchair-bound person, and make the city completely accessible to that person, then suddenly the city is also accessible to, say, elderly people who have trouble stepping over the sidewalk because it's too hard, or the teenager that doesn't pay any attention when walking over the sidewalk, that he doesn't, you know, fall over it because mm-hmm. he's staring at his phone, or the 5-year-old with the bike. All these situations but can solve for that them as well. And it's sort of it's in product design or service design, it's been referred to as, you know, the paradox of specificity. The more specific you make something for a very narrow group of users, the more usable it is for actually a very broad group of users. And we keep ignoring that, especially in public services where we're trying to address everyone all at the same time.
I love this point because it essentially says that, you know, if you make something vulnerability proof, let's say, then automatically it's going to be... it's going to be more easier to use essentially for everyone else, like even easier than it was before, let's say. But in order to do that, indeed, you need to take into consideration and into account, and also you need to involve in the process exactly these people and these groups who are vulnerable. Now, a question that comes to mind is, do you have the feeling that this focus, let's say, this like shift in attention has, I don't know, taken up speed or pace, let's say, relatively recently, or the topic of vulnerability in service design has somehow always been there, let's say, and now we're focusing on that for some reason, but what are these reasons?
Well, I mean, service design came about, you know, starting somewhere in the 80s, it became a thing. It's actually a fairly new term. It's a fairly new discipline. And it came from the recognition that, you know, just as in product design, you involve the user of the product, and in services, you can involve the target group in design of the service as such. The other thing is that there is a huge shift in where value is created in terms of economic output. We're no longer, you know, a manufacturing economy. We are a service economy. So, and as everything becomes more and more of a service, it's the actual experience that matters more than the thing itself. I mean, for all practical reasons, you don't need to buy a drill if you need just one hole in the wall. So you need the hole in the wall. You don't need the drill. So it's easier to go to the neighbor with two bottles of beer and says, can I borrow yours, than go buy your own. And it's all about the end result of it. And then when you start thinking and extrapolating on that, the need for a car is to get from point A to point B comfortably. But now I can rent one. I don't need to own one. So ownership isn't the main issue anymore. It's the ability to use whatever it is that I need to get the job done. And at that point, it becomes the differentiating point between different companies is not what they do, but how they do it. And that how is the experience. And then when you start expanding on that, you realize that there's a lot of user groups that you're not addressing properly. In digital devices, it's become, you know, when the first iPhone came out in 2007, nobody ever thought that, you know, an 85-year-old would, with a little bit of a shaky hand, would try to use a touchscreen. But it immediately became apparent that, yes, this is also a user group. So they had to design part of the software to adapt to users whose fingers are shaking. So they have to push harder for the software to react so they don't make accidental moves on the software. And that is, you know, digital devices and services have been at the forefront of this transformation in focusing on narrow groups, because you can easily update the actual product, because the physical device doesn't change, it just how it behaves changes. So that has given a lot of insight and also recognition that there are these small extreme groups are actually quite important. And once you improve it for them, suddenly, hey, look at that, everybody else can use it as well. And it's like the dark mode on your phone. I mean, that was for people with sensitive eyes, but hey, teenagers use it all the time. It's not because they have sensitive eyes, because they spend all night looking at their phone and they don't want to drain the battery. So the reasons for using stuff becomes different, but the benefits of that design are much broader than just for that narrow group.
Shout out to dark mode, which is my favorite mode, of course, as well, so I have to say it. But your example of the smartphone actually made me think of another question, which is, do you think that in a way, the pace, let's say, and the depth, the extent of technological development, and as a consequence also of adoption, you know, especially from the side of governments and public administrations, do you think that that in itself is making more salient the topic of addressing, or better, the commitment, let's say, to address digital vulnerability? Like, do you think that this speed and depth of digital development is making it like more of a problem, let's say?
I think so. I mean, I think a couple of days ago counted the amount of different channels that I receive information from and that I communicate through. I'm sorry, there's like 30 different ways that people get in touch with me and then I need to respond to them. And sometimes you forget which app was it that, yeah, I got this message, and I can't find the email. Oh, it was in Slack. No, it was not in Slack. I used Vibe. No. Yeah, God knows where it is. So the thing is that we're overwhelmed by that. But if you're, I mean, I was in a conference in Cologne just as COVID was hitting, and there was a professor that said very nicely that until, you know, this century or last century, a person was born and died in the same technological time frame. That means if he was born with a horse and buggy, he probably died with horse and buggy. We are now, I mean, my mother was born, you know, towards the end of horse and buggy and she will die in a time where everything is, you know, virtual reality is a reality. I mean, people can live out their lives online without ever meeting real people. I mean, that kind of change is incredibly, you know, stressful. And I think, I mean, our vulnerabilities are all increasing. The mental health issues of youth are not a joke. And one of the reasons is, I mean, the amount of information that you're getting today is what, you know, in the Middle Ages, a person got through their whole lifetime. We're getting in a month. So how can we cope with this? And if you add on devices that are digital, where it's not obvious what they do, and it's not part of your life experience, then you're going to have a really hard time understanding how this thing actually works. And that creates digital vulnerability, especially for elderly people. But in many different societies and segments where it's just not part of your everyday routine, and suddenly you have to, oh, I have to do that online. I don't even know what I'm doing. What does this word mean? You know, what does upload mean? What does download mean? I don't know.
I mean, I totally understand this because I also have a personal example, like a family example on that, which I will mention super briefly, but it's super fitting because it's my granddad, for example, from my mom's side. He was born in 1915, beginning of World War One. Granddad, not great-granddad, my granddad. And then he passed away in 2014. So he was born at the beginning of World War One, and then he passed away at the time when, in the year just previous to that happening, I was having my first experience of life abroad, for example, and I was in Scotland, and my granddad could actually see me through Skype. For example. So, and that was already probably, you know, or like watching the football matches on TV as well, like in the, just for decades, as he was like a strong football supporter, let's say football team supporter. So the extent and the pace exactly of this change and what it means for a lot of people who belong to digitally vulnerable groups, potentially, such as you mentioned the elderly, but then also people, for example, with degrees of disability, as we said before, then those are actual very significant upheavals happening. And Margus, now I will get a little bit to your personal experience with that, your professional experience with that, rather. So what are, for example, some of the ventures and projects, let's say, of service design and maybe even like service redesign at this point that you have been involved that deal directly with this topic of the digital vulnerability?
Well, I think maybe it was a year ago. It was an interest. We did a training for local governments, and one of the questions that one of the teams wanted to address was digital vulnerability in their local community. And the logical idea they had is that, you know, we should gather the old people and try to teach them how to use the computer. It was their hypothesis, and they were sure that this was going to help everyone and so on and so forth. And they were, I think, buying computers already. And one of the things that we always do is we make our teams go out and talk to these people that they want to target, and not just, you know, go there with a questionnaire, but really go talk to them, sit in their house and see what they do and so on. And the issue of computer literacy didn't come up. The elderly have an IT department that's usually called offspring or offspring of offspring. So son, daughter, or grandson, daughter, that usually helps with the stuff that needs to get done with the computer. I need to, you know, declare my taxes, or can you, you know, send this email to this place? Usually they have someone to call that gets this stuff done, who pays the invoices, for example, even that, you know, just send them to me, I'll pay them for you and don't worry. But it turned out that what they wanted to help with was getting the packages from the package terminals, because all the post offices are closed now. There are big, you know, rows of boxes, and each interface for each package terminal is different, works in a different way. So they have a mobile phone, they get a you know, they bought something online that they had help with their grandson or granddaughter. And then it shows up as an SMS and says, go there and insert this PIN. And then it's, which one of these is it? It's the blue one, the red one, or green. Okay, it wants, what should I enter? Do I have to click this button or that button? And it was, it what became the issue, how do I get my magazines out of the box?
Yeah.
And it, the vulnerability issue was in the question of, I want to be independent in these things. It wasn't, I don't need to be independent in declaring my taxes. I do it once a year. I get, you know, my son to help me, period, end of story. Or I need to reset. And often they don't have a computer anymore. The computer is too old and they don't update that, because if you're not online every day like an office worker, a computer is not an issue. They have a smartphone. They don't need help to learn to use the computer. They need, how do I, you know, get Tinder on my phone so I can meet other nice old people? And but this is the human aspect of it, and that is much more important. They want to watch YouTube videos, not learn how to do, you know, go on the bank. I mean, they have a bank card. I get cash out of the box, out of the wall, or I pay with my card. I trust the system enough. So it's going to the people and really listening to what they do in their lives and what digital vulnerability actually means for them, because it might not be what we expect it to be. And that is the foundation of service design and the whole idea of nothing for us without us, that you have to go and be with them and empathize properly, not just presume that we know.
And understand the value, for example, of being able to pick up from a parcel box your favorite gardening or crochet magazine, because you know that's the need that they have in that moment. And there is a service that allows them to access, let's say, that whatever knowledge or activity that they want to do, and it has to work exactly for them. Along these lines, I would ask you, not to go to the blackboard and, you know, like write down who are the goods and who are the bads, let's say, in this, but have you ever seen, let's say, some particularly, let's say, virtuous examples of good service design that takes into account digital vulnerability, apart from your own, of course, I assume, or some others that, you know, spectacularly failed and somehow became, you know, like case studies in how to not do this?
I mean, I think there are so many of them all around us that the spectacular, you know, successes are, I think, with companies such as Google and Apple, and who have a massive amount of data running in that they can adjust their software to actually work for various specific target groups. And I mean, if you think about the iPad or iPhone, the fantastic thing was when it came out, and it's not as simple as it used to be. When it came out, a three-year-old could use it. And I would say that is a digitally vulnerable group. Nothing is made for a three-year-old, but the three-year-old could figure out, oh, I dragged the thing to the right, something happens. And it has no fear of pushing a button. Look at that happen. The iPhone had just one button back then, so you pushed the button, it went back to where it was. It was really easy to figure out. But a button telephone with all the, you know, way to go through the menu, it was impossible to use. So I mean, it was this shift that happened. And I think what is the spectacular fails are always when something works and then it is improved from the point of view of an engineer rather than the user, where, yeah, we improved the interface, we made it much nicer, but the OK button moved from, you know, left to right, and suddenly you have cancel where OK used to be and OK where cancel used to be, and no matter what you do, you always push the wrong button at the end, and whoops,
yep,
my God, it didn't work. So I mean, I think these are the things, is when things aren't tested properly, when they are not user tested, when you don't give them to the people that are supposed to use it, and really observe how they use it. And the logic is, their logic is correct, no matter how wrong it is from an engineering point of view, because you didn't go from A to Z, you started in the middle of the O.
Margus, conversation has been absolutely very, very interesting. Let's make it even Let's make it even more so for to say like by saying who at the e-governance conference 2023 then should participate, let's say, and really like keep their ears open, let's say, on the topic of digital vulnerability. Who is this topic for?
I think it is for today, it's everyone in government, because everything is digital or should have a digital component. But I think the most important aspect is that the decision makers that have the power to actually finance the project, who are, you know, the chancellors or ministers, that they understand the importance of involvement of these extreme user groups, of the vulnerable user groups, because when we're sitting working with people who are like us and we all have give or take the same opinion because we are all similar, then we will create something that is exclusively usable only for ourselves, but these vulnerable groups will not be addressed. So having the wherewithal to understand that we have to involve the vulnerable groups and we have to put in the effort to go find them, talk to them, and understand them properly, that requires decision makers who give you time and money to do that properly.
Yeah, exactly. To go beyond the like-minded and in this sense also the like-abled, let's say. Yeah. And Margus, on this, I thank you very, very much for participating in today's episode of the podcast.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks also to all the listeners who tuned in, and you'll be able to find Margus, and also myself, actually, at one of the panels of the upcoming e-governance conference 2023. The panel will be Digital Vulnerability Cannot Be Fixed in a Boardroom, but Margus also has his own keynote there. The conference, you know it already, is called Digital Innovation as Catalyst for Social Change. It's happening in the usual, by now usual, hybrid format, both in Tallinn and online, on May 30 and May 31 of the next month. Now, on this, make sure to head to 2023.egovconference.ee for all the information. Make sure also to be there at the conference, and I'll see you all very soon.
This podcast is brought to you by the eGovernance Academy. Tune in next time.